One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hey listeners, let's take a moment for a shout out to our sponsor, Squarespace. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for creators to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create an awesome website, connect with your audience, and sell anything all in one place, all on your terms. Even if you don't know where to start with creating a website, Squarespace has you covered with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally created layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business, and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people. Flexible payment options make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So, ready to get started? Head over to squarespace.com/gamescoop for a free trial. And when it's showtime, use our special promo code GAMESCOOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now, let's dive back into GAMESCOOP. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GAMESCOOP. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Hi, everybody.
Sam Claiborne.
I've been thinking about what to say at the head of GameScoop for like 5 years, and I like what our producer just said. Let's roll!
And Justin stick? Davis.
Scoop.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We are going to discuss the return of E3. E3 the White, maybe it's called. It's back, but not quite the same. We're going
to
flip through.
I am E3 as it was intended to be.
We're going to flip through a 1998 issue of PlayStation Magazine. I'm not sure which month I picked, but we'll look at that. When we get to it, hold your horses, everybody. But first, how would everybody feel if you were playing an EA-published game and EA was just deciding how difficult your game should be for you, and they're making all those adjustments behind the scenes? EA has patented an adaptive difficulty system that will adjust the difficulty to hopefully keep you playing longer. The system, this is from a patent, the system can, quote, review historical user activity data with respect to one or more video games to generate a game retention prediction model. This model is then used to predict how long the user is expected to play for. Using this prediction, the dynamic difficulty system can calibrate the challenge to make sure you play for that duration. It's a little unclear to me. Does it sound like they're going to like make the game easier to keep you playing longer? Or they think you're getting bored?
I didn't
bored?
Think about that. I thought they were like, make him fight the boss 9 times. But that, yeah. that seems that like would, a 9 times person.
That wouldn't keep me playing though.
Yeah, for sure. That's how I interpreted it too, that it would extend, like let's say there's a level and you blast through it so clearly you're a very adept, skilled player. And the next equivalent level, they make it more difficult so that it takes longer for you to get through that chapter. That's how I interpreted it. But yeah, Damon, you're right. Like, it's very unclear in general. On the surface, I would say, technologically speaking, seems pretty cool that you can have anything that's adaptive. Like, you know, we really like procedurally generated worlds. That was the buzzword, the development buzzword of like 2 years ago or so. So I think the concept of something that adapts to your playstyle is inherently cool, but it definitely depends on what their application for it is going to be. And then other thought that I had was, as long as they're retaining the other difficulty options, like let's say you have easy, medium, difficult, adaptive, like that could be cool as an option. Yeah. But yeah, maybe not as a standard deciding how I want to play a certain game option.
Games, I don't understand why games already do this. Resident Evils have been doing this since 4, I think, was the first one that did this. And so I'm not quite sure why this news, I guess the wrinkle that's new is that A, it's, you know, pinging some server somewhere, like it's not just happening on the game disc, and it, with the specific intent of getting people to play longer, matching their play time. But I always get stressed playing modern Resident Evil games because I wonder, like, I got through that section really cleanly and clearly. Like, am I not going to get as many green herbs when I really need them later now? Like, I'm a bad player. Don't, like, the game's going to think I'm good. I did that section well.
First of all, the frog they were just fighting in this game was so frustrating.
Yeah, that guy sucked.
Yeah. And the ATSTs can be trouble too.
So the one thing that they mentioned in the patent's abstract was that it would review historical user activity data with respect to one or more video games to generate a game retention prediction model, meaning it's not even necessarily like level. It's specifically, and I don't know, is that going to be within a franchise or is that going to be
that's kind of interesting.
Any number of games, yeah.
Like, oh, this person's really good at shooters, but like bad at racing games. So let's, you know, adjust it based off that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I had no idea that that was happening in Resident Evil 4, which is like one of my favorite games of all time. And so I'm rethinking everything right now.
It's not very fancy. I think it changes the drops you get when you like hack open barrels and stuff. Like,
yeah, I read that in our coverage, and that must be what it is because that's the thing that's randomized that I can think of. If it's not, I think there's maybe more or fewer zombies in some areas, not zombies. I don't know. But yeah, that's the only thing I assumed in reading that was that they were going to try to like, make things difficult for people. So I've completely rethought my tolerance for this. And I do like the idea of, you know, like right now we are on the precipice of like really accessible games. So, you know, Last of Us 2 is really leading here where you could just turn off everything and make it a very, you know, accessible game and quote unquote easy. And that's like really great. I like crave that in games that don't have it sometimes now when I just want to experience certain elements of them. But I don't, I like to know what I'm doing. I don't really want a computer determining that for me.
Yeah, my gut reaction when I read the news was like, oh, I don't like this. Like, I want to select easy, medium, or hard. But, like, as I continue to reflect on it, it's like I've talked on Scoop many, many times about how video games have a problem with, like, it's the only medium on Earth where it's like, no, you can't see the end. Like, you don't need anything to get to the end of a movie or TV show or album. And, like, the games are the only one that, like, gatekeeps in that way. And it's a real problem that, like, this has the potential to solve. But, but as someone that's much more embedded in games personally, I don't know that this is the feature for me. Like, I wanna know what difficulty level I'm playing through something at, I think.
Same. Matchmaking already does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never get to clown on noobs after a certain point.
But that's more about the players than the game AI itself, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, Mario. The Mario games have the baby mode that turns on if you die a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm. LA Noir lets you skip ahead through missions if it's determining that you're a complete failure at life.
That's right. I forgot about that.
You do feel like I always get so enraged in Mario where it's like, would you like to turn on baby mode? I'm like, get out of here.
A lot of games
that's
do
like
that.
That's like Netflix asking, are you still watching? Like, stop judging me. Yes, I'm watching.
It's so judgy. And a lot of contemporary games say, did you know you can turn down the difficulty? And it does it right when you die. Like, whether it's a tool tip when you die or not, it pops up right then, you know?
Oh, it's the worst. It's so passive aggressive. It's like, you can change the difficulty on the fly, you know? Shut up. I'm gonna get him this time.
The other thing this makes me think about, because I on off think about like all the user data that all of these companies are logging from us, and so thinking about them logging like the equivalent of our kill death ratio, essentially, you know, your general skill level. I'd be really curious to see what mine says. Like, you're an excellent driver and also an excellent first person shooter, but you suck at these strategy games, for example. But yeah, I'm always curious, like, where are they storing this data? What are they doing with this data? Especially in an age where, you know, privacy is increasingly a concern and increasingly a topic that people are pretty savvy about, because it's becoming something that's fairly well documented across a lot of different apps and platforms that we use, and then also the risk of it being sold in different areas. So now that data is being used to apply to what some people have on the surface decided is like this nefarious thing, where it's like the arcade game manipulation of making it so you have to constantly put quarters in, but now it's, instead of putting quarters in, it's putting your time in.
Yeah.
Justin was talking.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you're comparing video games to other mediums and how this is the only one that gatekeeps, you know, like the ending away from you. But I wonder if other mediums, like say Netflix, I wonder if they're already gathering, you know, series completion data on us and building their own, what's the word for it? Retention prediction model for each user. So even if they're not using that to inform how they produce content, maybe they use that to decide what content to suggest to you.
Netflix absolutely does that. And they actually make casting decisions in their shows based off that. Like, they know what actors have been popular in previous Netflix, you know, shows. Yeah. And they'll change, like, your Netflix will have different actors in your Netflix cards than mine will, it's based crazy. Off what we've clicked on and watched in the past for the same show.
Yeah.
Like, some people might see all female actors or some might see all male for the exact same shows.
Yeah. Crazy stuff.
You know, at least it's being used, at least like the player telemetry data is being used for, you know, for good, potentially good in this instance. Like, well, I think Ubisoft is one of the companies that does this most, you know, where they have an extreme level of player telemetry data for like every single Assassin's Creed. Like, how far do people make it in the game? How many attempts did this mission take? They even went so far as, I think it was, what was the France one? Unity? What's the one in Paris? This is a single player game, and at the end of each mission, you had an opportunity to like take a little, like, how many stars would you give that mission you just took? Like, you say that mission was difficult or was it easy? And you had a little chance to like submit information about the game.
Yeah, it was like the iTunes store invading your game.
It was so weird. And then they've backed off of that somewhat.
Are you enjoying Assassin's Creed?
So if you think about like the business reason for keeping people playing, it used to be that like you'd add a multiplayer mode in there so people didn't return the game disc, and then there wasn't a used market so people would buy new games. Now there's not really that concern as much anymore. I wonder, the only thing I could think of to make it so people would want to keep playing your game, I guess, is so they buy, you know, things through microtransaction. And I don't really see how playtime is a business model as much as it used to be, at least, if it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the monetization may follow. I think their thought process is probably like, you know, more engagement in our brands and our franchises is better. And then they can, you know, we're seeing FIFA now, like that game has FIFA Ultimate Team, you know, they're clearly able to monetize playtime and they're probably going to figure it out in other games, if I were to guess.
It's why Rockstar is tripled down on the standalone online experiences too. Like, you're creating a community, which creates a reputation around that. And then, you know, on the opposite side, on the non-business side, which it still speaks to the business side, like that's a metric that gamers always cite too. Not everybody has the ability to buy every single player game possible in a year. And they're, you know, potentially going to be particular about what games they want to play, and shelf life is one of the commonly cited things. Like, you know, everybody wants to play Skyrim because you can get hundreds of hours worth of game time out of it. So it's that value perspective too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, EA wants people playing EA games, like not playing Activision games.
Yes, I think that's true.
For now.
If Jedi Fallen Order 2 shipped with this adaptive difficulty mechanic, I would probably try it out. But just like you guys said, I wouldn't want to lose the ability to manually adjust the difficulty on my own if I choose.
It's very stressful. If I body a boss, I don't want it making the game harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if people would like artificially create time spent. Like, would you just be right before the boss triggers and you just like stand there for a long time? I mean, I'm sure it's smarter. The technology would be smarter than just that. But I'm interested to see if like people would try to game the system to create an experience they want.
Speedrunners.
Yeah.
Game the system, make it really easy.
That would be an interesting wrinkle. Yeah, that completely changes that environment. Yeah.
Just die really fast 30 times, then it makes the rest of the game easier.
And then you can zip through the rest of the game.
It's kind of like level scaling. Like, I don't like level scaling. I want to be in control of my experience.
Yep.
Same.
Moving on. The boys are back in town. If the boys are E3, then the town is online.
Great.
E3 2021 is coming back online with Xbox, Nintendo involved. Who else is on board? Capcom, Konami, Ubisoft, Take-Two, Warner Brothers, Coach Media. I don't know if it's Coach or Coke. but no Sony. No Sony again, which I don't think is too much of a surprise. You are being annoying.
Sonic.
For audio listeners, he's talking to his cat, not me.
Yeah, not Sam. Coming back June 12th through the 15th. It's going to include live press conferences and a four-day-long video stream. The show will be a reimagined and hyper-engaged digital experience, and it will be entirely free. It's not going to be behind a paywall. What do we think an online E3 will look like? I imagine those press conferences, if they're coming from Xbox, man, I don't even... Nintendo hasn't had a press conference in years. They've just been doing their Nintendo Directs. So what, without having a booth, what's Nintendo's involvement in E3 this year going to look like?
Nintendo Direct.
They'll just have an E3 affiliated Direct, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, a Nintendo Direct would be a stand-in for a press conference, just like everybody has their own version these days of something that's direct to you. So it being digital just means you get that information online instead of
waiting
in a line.
I just mean in recent years they've held the Nintendo Direct, which it just goes on, you know, YouTube and IGN. It's
but then
not
they
actually
do,
going through E3.
But they do their treehouse from the show floor. So that's where it's like live from E3, and they do like 3 days of that. So I can see them doing that more easily.
I forgot about this.
If you're just watching the show, we've got the Dancing Man from E3. I don't even remember what year that was. Anyway.
Killer Instinct.
Like, the Xbox press conference can be the same with that, you know, just minus a live audience.
But they got Bethesda now.
They got Bethesda, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of, you know, affection for E3. And that's basically, I have a lot of affection for E3, and I'm glad to hear that it's back. I'm skeptical that a digital-only E3 is super relevant in a world in which, you know, IGN is a summer event and Jeff Keighley is a summer event and everyone has their own standalone summer events. You know, it's a little bit unclear why we need this. But I like E3, and it's been a part of my life and a part of my career for my entire life, and I'm glad to hear them, you know, sort of having a vision for what it should look like in a modern age.
The thing that I'm looking forward to is still the figuring out of how we play demos at E3, and maybe that more people can play demos or how that works. Because like it's the access to the games that the past year we've had some really interesting solutions for that. But like, can the ESA and E3, you know, pull that together? And will we be playing, you know, the games of this fall, the summer at all? It's unclear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to think. Almost every big publisher has their own format, you know, for holding their own online events now that they control completely. So it's interesting to wonder, what did ESA have to actually convince people like Xbox and Nintendo to participate in a digital E3 when they could have just done their own thing on their own time whenever they wanted to, right?
I think to Justin's point about it being so much a part of, you know, his personal career, my personal, all of our personal careers, the same can be said for the industry in general. I think it's one of those things where it's been long supported, and, you know, there are people who are members of the board as well from these individual companies. And so there's that loyalty and commitment to tradition, I suppose. Yeah. And, I think, you know, a thing that has supported the industry for years.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of goodwill towards E3, but it's funny, like, you know, the game companies, publishers also fought with the ESA and E3, you know, and EA backed out and was not a part of it, and Activision, you know, like, there's all this strife, but then it goes away for a year, and now I feel like there's some goodwill of like, well, you know, maybe we want you around after all E3, we're sorry. Yeah. Although those companies that were not involved are still not involved, so, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we ran our own event in lieu of E3 last year, and like one of the consistent things that, and at least anecdotally, I was seeing from people as far as feedback goes is obviously there's a somewhat similar level of announcements. I think that there probably weren't as many because there were a lot of unanticipated obstructions to people's marketing beats and their plans, what they can get prepared for June or not. Last year because of the obvious reasons. But a lot of what we kind of anecdotally heard was that things felt a little bit scattered. And one of the greatest things about E3 is that it creates this 1 week of anticipation and this 1 week of expectations. And then, you know, for us on the industry side, it used to be 1 week of all being in the same city at once and getting a chance to have those conversations in person for fans. It was getting a chance to meet their favorite developers, get hands-on, as Sam was saying earlier, get hands-on with some of those games themselves too in an early access format. So obviously some of that is lost, but I think the appeal to the person who can bring everybody together, which is a lot of what we set out to do last year, but obviously everybody had their own timelines, their own constraints as well. So we worked as best as possible within those. And I think the ESA is doing the same this year because we're in a second, more hopeful, but still pandemic year currently.
Mm-hmm. And it also, like, I mean, to answer Damon's question with another take, there's a the reason why people would want to participate in E3 is that E3 presumably will be back and will be an in-person thing and will be a spectacle again, mm-hmm. with a show floor. And I think, you know, there's some anticipation and excitement to get back to that and then to be there and participating with it, which means you got to kind of play the game until it happens.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Damon, how many E3s have you been to?
Since 2000, well, I started going professionally in 2006.
Yeah. I started going in 2003 and missed one when my daughter was born, and I've been to all the rest. And, like, I'm kind of like, that event was over the last 3 or 4 years has been, like, equal parts excitement and dread. Like, I've been to many of them, but it's very intense and it's a lot. But, like, now, after 2 years off, I'm going to be so ready and so hyped for a big, blown out, crazy E3 2022. Like, I'm completely recharged and energized and ready to get back to just the insanity of everybody's booths and the announcements and the whole week of craziness.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the importance of keeping up with consistency. Like last year, San Diego Comic-Con did their own digital event. It wasn't nearly in the spirit of what an in-person event at San Diego would have been. I think like the structure of their panels was really different. The rollout of news, like there's just a lot that was left on the table that I imagine if it weren't a pandemic year would have still occurred last year. But the consistency of keeping that up. And I think that's the important thing of we skipped E3 last year. But if we have one this year, there's a promise to the future ones where it comes back in its original glory and that gives people something to look forward to. It's almost like, you know, in our world, when we have a show, if we publish Next Gen Console Watch at Fridays at 6 a.m., you know, Pacific time every week, like that consistency creates and establishes a community around it. And so that kind of helps communicate subtly to the audience, like, you know, what they can, you know, drive their fandom around, essentially. So for E3, it's that thing in June. The second that we start forgetting and losing that thread, and then everybody else's individual Nintendo Directs and showcases start to become the new normal, then we increasingly move away from the concept of, like, a physical back-to-normal E3 post-pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I still love E3, even though I was... you know, seemed a little skeptical about this online version earlier, but I still love the event. I still look forward to it. It's become maybe a little bit cliche anytime we write an article about E3 for the comments to be like, E3 is dead, E3 is unnecessary, who cares? But I still love E3 as long as it's like a big event, you know, especially if we get back to it next year. It's just like something I still look forward to every year. This is something that we talked about on Next Gen Console Watch this week. I was saying that, you know, later on this year, I think as restrictions start to loosen up, when people can go to like concerts again, I think those are going to be like religious experiences for some people who've been really missing live music. And I could see like E3 2022, Microsoft's press conference, when there's a live audience again, that's going to feel really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Let's share what we've been playing. And I'm happy to report that last night, I started Yakuza Like a Dragon.
Yeah.
Oh. Whoa, cool, Damon.
Got him.
Seriously. It has a great start. It draws you in.
That's just what I was going to say. I only played a couple hours, so it's like, you know, very early. I'm barely like scratching the surface, but I instantly liked it. I was instantly on board. The opening is so cool, even though it's like you guys were saying, there are long cutscenes and long segments of dialogue, but I didn't mind. And that's in contrast to other stuff I've been playing, like Narita Boy last week and Oddworld Soulstorm, which is out this week. Both those games there start out with a lot of dialogue and exposition. I was feeling impatient. I really wanted to get to the gameplay, but with Yakuza Like a Dragon, I was just like, this is great. I think part of it is that those cutscenes are like really well choreographed. Like they're choreographed like a movie.
Acting's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can skip through a lot of them too.
So yeah, you can do that too.
They make it easy. Yeah, exactly.
And the characters are super likable, so it's easy for me to just stick around.
It's such good arch melodrama. But then I'm so glad you guys are playing these games now. And I haven't played Like a Dragon yet, but I know that tonally it's similar to the previous brawlers that I do have experience with. Where like, it's such a crazy, unique. There's no other game that mixes the drama, like the very real stakes and drama that's happening in the main plot line, but then just the pure over the top silliness and ridiculousness that surrounds that. And it shouldn't work. But it does somehow. Mm-hmm.
And then there's also so much heart from Ichiban Kasuga himself too, your main protagonist. Mm-hmm. He's just like so morally driven, such a good friend, even when he could probably stand up for himself a little bit more. So Damon, when you said all the characters were likable, my eyebrows raised just a touch. Mm-hmm. So wait until you get into the story just a little bit more, and I'll be curious to hear what you think.
Just my first impression.
100%, 100%. Because there's a thing that happens and then, you know. Feelings ensue. But anyway, he's always just like, just really sweet and loving. And then when you get into the areas where you're really bonding with your team in the survive bar, you see a lot of that passion and friendship come out. And it's very genuine and loving in the midst of like goofiness and all the other things that Justin was just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I will say,
continue with that. Go ahead.
I was going to say for I'm obviously still playing that game too. But I have criticisms now that I'm so deep into it. Yeah. Good. So I have one joke criticism and one real one. Joke criticism is, Damon, have you realized yet that as you're running around town, if you make a like really quick about face turn, your party members are trailing behind you like little lost puppies and you always slam into them and it just kind of like breaks your momentum while you're walking?
That hasn't happened to me yet.
Oh, it's a thing. I saw on Twitter a group of people had done like a live action version of it, and they do these little like animations in the process. It's very funny and very cute and very relatable.
I did have the same experience with the map though, the mini map. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to go into it's locked by default, I think, and that
just change that it over.
That didn't
you
work
can change it actually.
I know.
You have to
I did.
Go
I did
deep
it.
In, okay, good.
I did it in the options. Yeah. Good. Sam, anything new that you're playing?
Well, was there another criticism?
Sorry, there was a real one.
There's a legit criticism, which is, and maybe it's the way that I played through the game because it is pretty open-ended in a lot of ways. So you can like spend a lot of time in side quests. At some point in time, you come up to a battle arena and you get some of the best weapons in the game through that battle arena when you're going through the progression of it. And so I got really obsessed with the battle arena one, two, three nights. And I went all the way to get every single special item because there are specific challenges per battle. So once I did that, everything else, like all of the stores, even the crafting system in the game, like were just completely useless for me.
Oh,
and I'm putting a lot of fun because there's a woman who does this crafting system and you can support her store by funding it. And it goes like rapidly scales. So you start with 2 million and then suddenly it's like, it requires 21 million yen to get to the next level. And I'm pretty rich now, if I may say so myself. So I've been putting a lot of money into her, but it's still not resulting in anything that's useful for me, that I haven't gotten, like I haven't gotten better weapons since the battle arena. Mm. So I haven't, and then I found all these like hidden stores after I discovered the battle arena. So maybe I did things out of order, but the weapon progression system has been kind of warped for me, which is, I guess, okay. Cause I have good weapons from the battle arena, but
well, then you cool earned them, right?
Yeah.
Like you spent the time, it's challenging. And I think the game wants to give you an option to not do that. They want to give you the easy option, which is just to buy stuff. So I think you deserve what you have.
For sure. But I wish like there's additional areas that you get into and at certain parts of the story and there are stores there. And I wish like at that level, because I progressed further into the story, there'd be like special stores with really high prices so I can get even better. I just want constantly better weapons.
Yeah. Like in that makes sense. Cause like now you're past the point where you'd even be grinding in that area. Yep. So now at least there should be like really high end, like weapons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Wow, that's a pretty uncommon RPG thing.
Yeah, and
it's just like, again,
it might be because I did things out of order and I obsessively went through the battle arena maybe more than they were expecting to. Maybe there's some sort of dynamic, advanced, you know, gameplay, weapon store sort of thing. Maybe that'd be interesting for EA to patent and share with Sega in the future.
I mean, I think Yakuza games are often pretty willing to like, hey, do you want to do this nutso thing? Like, go for it. Like, you know, they're not really the type of game that wants to, like, really closely guard and control the experience for every player. It's like, nah, you, like, if you use this baseball bat, it'll be nuts the whole way through. Like,
yeah, very true. You know.
Sam, how about you?
I'm playing Hollow Knight.
Right.
And I'm pretty far, I think, into it. And it's gotten really difficult. One thing I don't think I talked about very much last time is that if the punishment for dying in that game is that you leave behind all your stuff. You know, it's like that kind of Dark Souls idea. Well, not really like Dark Souls, but you leave behind your stuff. But your stuff in this game is only money. And money's super important. Like, most of your cool, like, optional upgrades and stuff, you just need to buy in stores. So you have to balance exploring, where you gain money, with the risk of exploring, which is, like, you don't know where your next save point is going to be. You're in a new area and you could lose everything and then have to get back to that point to reclaim it. So the other day, or last night, actually, I was playing and I got to the point where I found this guy and I could sell a bunch of my equipment that I was never able to sell before. And I did it. And I was like, oh no, I'm carrying around like 5,000 coins. And I'd only had like max ever 700 or 800 or 900, right? So I had five times the amount of loot I'd ever had, and I was in a new exploration area. So I had to tiptoe, like, so carefully to a save point that I knew about that was so far away, and it was one of the most tense gaming moments I've had in so long. And then, after that, I put everything in the bank to be safe, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of it, too, but, like, a lot of it was in the bank, and I went back to the bank after that, and the person wasn't in the bank. This is like a 2D Metroidvania game with like some cool like little twists and stuff. But I was like, where is the person? And I swung my sword and it knocked the facade of the bank down. It was just a wood wall. And now my money's been all stolen.
Where's your money?
That's a thing that can happen? Your money be stolen out of the bank?
After that whole sequence of me like so carefully babysitting my way back to the bank. And again, I did spend some of it, so I wasn't a total loss.
I played a lot of that game. I don't think I beat it, but I made it very close to the end of that game and don't remember that at all. So I don't know what you just went through.
I hope the banker is going to be like woven into a little side quest story where you like find her and you're like, where's my money?
Or it's not a bank at all. You just gave your money to someone.
But I had used the bank and withdrawn and like used it for a long time, so... It was pretty funny. And they have a maximum in the bank that you can store. And so I think they know that they could screw you, but the maximum is really high. And I'm pretty sure I had like close to it. So stupid. So that's what's happening in Hollow Knight right now.
Cool. Justin, what are you playing?
I mean, it's been Yakuza talk on Scoop for I feel like a couple months now, a long time.
That's how long the game is.
Yeah, Like a Dragon never ends, so I hear. No, you all talking about Like a Dragon made me want to get back into them, and I told you guys I was going to start it, but then I chickened out because even though it's its own original story and new story not connected to the previous games, there's, you know, cameos and callbacks, and, like, I've managed to stay spoiler-free, and, like, there's key characters that, like, I don't even know if they're alive or dead by the time Like a Dragon takes place, and I'm like, I don't want to have that spoiled for myself if, like, this Yakuza, you know, patriarch is still kicking, So, long story short, I started Yakuza 0 over again, which I just played it in 2018, which, you know, I guess is like 2.5 years ago at this point. And my plan was, I'm just going to blast through it fast and refresh myself on the story. But two things. One, I forgot that game is a billion hours long. And I forgot that if the whole point is to refresh myself on the story, I can't like skip cutscenes. And I have now clocked 50 hours on Yakuza 0, which, do you know how long that is for a game that's not an RPG? That's so long.
Like, yeah, for sure.
I couldn't believe it, but I did roll credits on it, and now I'm starting through Yakuza Kiwami, which is the remake of 1, and that one's not as long. That one's like, you know, 12 hours or so. Mm-hmm. Zero's so good, man. Like the Cabaret Club minigame, I had to go through all of that again. And I have one story about Yakuza Zero that I want to share. What I like most about those games, as I shared maybe last time I was on Scoop, was that the game world is not big. It's very, very small, but it's very dense and packed with, you know, overlapping stories and overlapping buildings and, you know, restaurants to eat in and so on and so forth. And one of the mini games in Yakuza Zero is slot car racing, which is already funny because you're this grown-ass man in a slick suit and you're going in and racing slot cars against these elementary age kids. And and he becomes obsessed with it. You're like buying slot car parts all around, you know, pawn shops around town. And you have to do this slot car racing minigame for a while. And then you eventually get embroiled in the life of these like 11-year-olds. And one of them has a crush on another one. And there's all these sub stories related to it. And then this 11-year-old girl starts calling you her boyfriend. And he's like, no, no, no. Like, I'm not your boyfriend. And then you end up having to do a slot car race battle against her dad because he keeps calling you a pervert. He's like, I can't believe my daughter's too young to be dating. What's wrong with you? It's this whole thing. It's this storyline that just goes on forever. And it ends with there's this guy called the Pocket Circuit Fighter who's a grown-up. And he's always in the Pocket Circuit Stadium, which is what they call slot car racing. And he's got this whole costume on, the Pocket Circuit Fighter, and it turns out he's the secret boss of the whole thing. He's the fastest slot car racer in all of Japan. And it's this big showdown at the end, and he's like, we will compete for the title of who's going to be Pocket Circuit Fighter. And Kiryu's like, oh no, I don't want to be called that. I don't want... He says, I'll race you, but I don't want... He's like, don't call me that. That's like how the storyline ends. Is he's like, you can still be Pocket Circuit Fighter. And it's just, it's so cute. Like, every single time I'm like up in that part of the city, I'm like, I'm just going to swing in there and do a little, you know, see what the kids are up to and do another race with them. And I finally completed that storyline just before I completed the game. And it's really magical how the Yakuza games have these tiny little threads that, like, it's this little out-of-the-way corner of the city, but then it blows up into this huge thing that's, like, 10 side quests and all these different cars to customize and buy. And, like, I don't know. That's what I love most about those games is, like, this thing that seems like it's going to be tiny ends up blowing up into something that's just, like, ridiculous and huge.
I look forward to playing more of Like a Dragon tonight. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. We'll be right back. Now we're going to flip through. It's the 1998 issue of the PlayStation Magazine. I'm going to full screen here. Can everyone see this?
Yeah.
Is it not the official PlayStation Magazine?
It's not. They are 100% independent, Sam, as it says right on the cover. Unofficial, unbiased, unrivaled is what they claim.
Except they really like PlayStation, clearly.
Yes, yeah.
Because they made a magazine about it. I mean, it's a focus. It might not be a bias, but it's a focus.
November 98, they've got Metal Gear Solid on the cover. And this is just, this is an awesome magazine. And this is probably the golden age of this magazine. They were hiring like really good comic artists to draw their covers every week. So the art was always really, really good.
That is cool, original art.
Yeah.
I remember, I didn't read PSM that much, but I always
I've never heard of it.
I loved their art.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And if you notice next to the price, this is an Imagine Media product.
Oh, yep. Nice. They started some websites at some point.
They did start some websites at some point. So 98, they've got some insight highlights from the European trade show. Interesting new games. The one I want to highlight is the bottom right, Saboteur from Eidos, and the developer is unknown.
Wait,
that game would was never released. There's never a game by Eidos called Saboteur that actually came out.
Okay, it's different than the game that we were really stumped by on GameScoop twice.
PlayStation hardware change. The latest hardware revision makes life difficult for would-be mod chippers, and I'm guilty of being a mod chipper on my PlayStation back in the day.
You played some freebies?
Well, played some Japanese games, primarily. They say, it has been confirmed that Sony has shipped another PlayStation hardware revision to U.S. shores, dubbed the 9000 series. These new PlayStations will remain functionally the same as the 7000 series, known here as the DualShock system, but it will be much harder to install a mod chip in them. So, like, the DualShock controller was out, but at this point, November 98.
It became a pack-in, I think, is what they're saying.
The PS1, I didn't remember the specific hardware change, but they revised that hardware many, many times, and not just the slim model, but they changed the ports on the back. They released a lot of revisions to that hardware.
What do you think they did to make it harder to mod? Do you think they just...
Oh, it says one of the ways Sony is discouraging users from putting mod chips into the new system is by rearranging the main motherboard and making it much smaller. The smaller board should make soldering a mod chip to it much more difficult.
That's annoying. Super mean.
And then in their little news notes on the side, they say Activision has signed a deal to publish all of LucasArts games for the next 2 years. I didn't know that was a thing. Did you guys know Activision was publishing LucasArts games?
I can't think of one that they did.
I looked it up. Apparently, they re-upped their deal, and it went into the late 2000s, Activision publishing LucasArts games.
And what year was this?
It's 98. So they had that deal in place for a while.
I mean, I got to say, I wasn't playing a lot of Star Wars games in that region, but, you know, like, that doesn't check out for some things, like all the Rogue Squadron games. Were those Activision? I guess so. Strange.
Without doing research on that, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Square remains exclusive to PlayStation, despite claims that Squaresoft is working on a Dreamcast version of Final Fantasy and an N64 version of Secret of Mana. A Square EA insider said that all the games in development by Square EA are currently for the PlayStation only. Do you guys remember Square EA?
I was going to say when you brought up the Activision LucasArts thing.
I'd completely forgotten this thing. EA was publishing Square's games in North America, and Square is publishing EA's games in Japan, which is, I guess that continued for a long, long time.
Okay.
I'm thinking of Call of Duty. I think maybe Square still publishes Call of Duty in Japan.
Whoa.
Yeah, the EA Square thing was like all through the PS1 Final Fantasy era.
Yeah. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Well, we never got that Mana game for Nintendo 64, I'll tell you that.
A news item on the PlayStation 2, very early, 98. One of the most interesting rumors around is that the internal project name for the upcoming PlayStation 2 is T-Rex. I don't remember that being a thing.
I was going to say, did that even end up being true?
I don't think so. And I wish the system would have just been called that, the PlayStation T-Rex. We still have time.
Whoa.
I don't think we have time for that console, but maybe for PlayStation 6. Full three-page ad for Medieval, which I included because we'll talk about Medieval a little bit later in the issue. Looks like somebody woke up on the wrong side of the coffin.
Get it? He's a skeleton.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's sleeping in a coffin.
This is a two-page ad for a game called Uprising X from 3DO after they pivoted from being a hardware manufacturer to just being a software company.
Whoa.
I don't know anything about this game, but this ad is bizarre. On the page one, it just says deploy, destroy, with a soldier holding a gun up in the air in front of a big explosion. And then there's like bottom of a rotting skeleton in the ground. It says then relax over a cold one.
I get it.
Weird. I guess a cold body?
Yeah, it's like relax. Look at all these people you killed. Now you can have a beer over them.
It's really weird. Very strange game.
Controversial take. I don't care for that.
Yeah, not a big fan of that one. And that's why no one remembers Uprising X. This is an ad for NFL Game Day 99 where it just says he went 92 yards, broke two tackles, juked one corner, and blew the numbers off the free safety. Come on, let the guy dance. So I guess this is the time when there was all the controversy about touchdown dances.
Celebrations.
Yeah. But if you watch football today, touchdown dances are totally back.
Yeah.
I think I agree. I agree with the take in this ad. Sports should be fun.
Let the guy dance. They have sales charts, but it's weird. There's an EV chart, so like from Electronics Boutique, and also an MPD chart, and they don't line up.
Okay, so that would be EB doing their own sales and then MPD doing everybody else, right?
I don't know. You would think there'd be like more parity, EB being...
But they're not even close, huh? I mean, I guess like EB is in malls and stuff, and then the other stuff is like department stores, so who knows? Something weird like that.
Yeah. Madden 99 was leading the EB charts, and WWF Warzone was leading the NPD charts. Moving on. Oh, yeah. The PlayStation Magazine's Most Wanted. So the most wanted upcoming PlayStation games. I'll count backwards. Number 10, Final Fantasy VIII. Then Quake 2. Lunar Silver Star Complete. Number 7 was Tomb Raider 3. Number 6 was Time Crisis 2. Number 5 was Silent Hill. Number 4, NBA Live 98. Number 3 was Ridge Racer Type 4. Number 2 was Suikoden 2. And number 1 was Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver.
Yeah,
that's a good set of games coming out.
That's pretty good taste they have, too.
Yeah, this is just such a great era.
They had a lot to look forward to in that era.
For PlayStation games.
I haven't played any of those games. Just want to point that out.
Not even Silent Hill? Probably like Silent
Hill. No, I've never played Silent Hill. Is there like any contemporary remake-y thing of that?
Justin, did they remake the original Silent Hill?
I can't keep... That's what I was just thinking about. Like, I feel like they've remade and redone them all and ported them, and I can't keep them hardly straight anymore.
Yeah.
I don't like spookies, so...
Yeah, that's true. They reviewed Metal Gear Solid, gave it a 5, which is it's like their 10. They rate on
it. And there's they were advertising a strategy guide on the cover for it, which I thought was really cool.
They do have a lengthy strategy guide in this issue. It's about as close to perfect a game can get. The only game we've played that even comes close is Resident Evil 2. Metal Gear Solid gets our highest recommendation.
What a funny comparison. Not that Resident Evil 2 is bad, but Metal Gear Solid is one of the all-time greats. I always love hearing about that stuff.
And here's another very questionable ad. This one's for Wild 9. A kid is pouring salt over a snail, and it says, "Remember how fun it was to torture your victims when you were young?"
What?
I guess you do something like that in Wild Night.
They're appealing to the serial killer audience, getting these in prison.
Apparently. Wild Night is from Shiny Entertainment, which is the Earthworm Jim studio. But I never played this one.
Oh, man.
They reviewed Tenchu in the same issue, 4.5 stars, I guess if you want to call them.
Look at that gray screenshot. It's like, it's realistic stealth action. I feel like I'm there.
Yeah. that's a series I think could come back. The original Spyro the Dragon they reviewed, they gave it a 4, and they said, a beautiful platformer with great features, but not a classic.
Yeah, people didn't like Spyro when those were out. I remember those all getting mediocre scores. But now, there's like a generation of people that played those anyway because they're games for kids, right? If you had a PlayStation.
They reviewed my favorite fighting game of all time, Rival Schools. Gave it a 4 out of 5.
When was the last time you played that game, Damon?
Well, a long time. A long time.
Yeah. But do you think you would still like it?
As long as the controls still feel good, I think.
I'm sure you can have like half of a beer and a sandwich while you wait for the each fight to load.
It's probably true.
particularly games from this era, the early 3D era, I'm sometimes afraid to go back to and like sully my memories of like how not clunky and how beautiful they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mentioned Medieval earlier. There's a coupon for $10 off if you get it from Sears. All you gotta do is clip your coupon. So I guess this is like the 1998 version of Wario 64 when you're just reading your magazine and you're like, oh, here's a deal on this game.
I find that offensive, Damon.
Maybe it's IGN Deals.
Yeah, the IGN Deals 1998 Twitter. Version of IGN Deals.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But then why I wanted to point this out, they gave Medieval a 3.
Oh.
And they said, Sony's undead hero needs a lot more life.
Well, which is why it's $10 off.
And why I thought it was, you know, they did the remake, what, 2 years ago now? Or maybe it was last year, I don't remember. But it sort of came and went with little fanfare, and I think I was surprised they were even remaking this game in the first place. I don't think it had, like, it was never that good to begin with, right?
That's better than a 3. That's the first score I've disagreed with in this magazine.
A whole feature on accessories for your PlayStation. They showcased the Sony PDA, which I don't think was ever released, at least outside of Japan. I don't think it actually was released in North America.
This would be like a what it's did we like, call them at the time? BlackBerry? Not what are they?
Well,
what was the early PDAs?
Yeah, they were PDAs. I think it's probably trying to head off like
Palm
maybe
Pilot.
Palm Pilot. Maybe they had the word that the Dreamcast had its little screen, its little Tamagotchi screen in the controller.
Mm-hmm. This says you can you'll be able to train characters for an RPG while away from your PlayStation. Like that sort of thing.
Right.
Oh, man.
But
doesn't PDA stand for like personal something assistant?
Personal data assistant? Digital assistant?
Digital assistant.
Probably data.
Nobody knows.
Sam, there's a trackball accessory for the PlayStation.
I know. For what? And it looks like an old Atari.
They're excited about it.
It's funny.
It says, someone is finally releasing a trackball for the PlayStation. The much-needed peripheral is exactly the controller that many games deserve. Strategy games like Command & Conquer, shooters like N2O, as well as a bunch of classic games, including the new Centipede.
Can you imagine playing a shooter with a trackball? I mean, I know it's basically an upside-down mouse, but come on.
What are they talking about? Like, I've never thought about that as... I mean, I get, like, how new... But the DualShock had already been out for a while. Shooters,
yeah,
because it's close to a mouse, you know.
So
it's crazy.
A feature crazy. On light guns, and I want to point out how like realistic looking these light guns are. There's nothing like there's
oh
no
my
like
gosh.
Bright. I know there's no bright orange nozzle to them or anything.
Yeah,
this is 1998. I guess that was still before there were lots.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know when those caps came about, but I know like even the Zapper they made orange in like 1988. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Someone very, finally very. Sat they hadn't had the meeting yet where they're like, let's not make it look like a real gun.
Yeah.
Gosh. Space age design.
An ad for NFL Extreme. It's just a can of whoop ass. It's just a picture of an opened can and the can is labeled whoop ass.
Yeah, a lot of that year.
I included this ad from Oddworld Abe's Exodus just because the new Oddworld just came out. Abe's Exodus was the sequel to Abe's Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. They were both so good.
Yeah. Good games. They're a preview of Pac-Man 3D on the PlayStation.
Avoid.
I never played this one. What did they say about it? There was something funny that they said. It's certainly going to be tough for Namco to bring its most popular character into the 90s, but we have faith that it will pull it off. After all, if you look back through the history of the company, its console titles have always been amazing and really pushed the envelope. Really? Namco's console games have always been amazing. Don't they have like Mappy? Like what were they doing on NES?
I mean, you know, like you said, like Time Crisis was in this very issue.
Yeah, and I guess there was Tekken 3.
Yeah,
already too. I guess I was just thinking. I was looking back a little bit further and into like the 16-bit and 8-bit days. An ad for G Darius, which is an amazing shooter on PlayStation.
Ooh.
And then this is like an ad for Game Shark, which I feel like maybe we've showcased on the show before. But the ad for Game Shark, which is, of course, you know, like the Game Genie device that lets you cheat and break your games.
Yeah.
Kids are trick-or-treating, and the woman is handing out bullets instead of candy.
So is she a Game Genie? Oh, no, she's just like a... I see.
But this is
like
for Game Shark.
Yeah. That's really strange.
But I don't like. It doesn't really. She's handing out bullets. I guess. Yeah, you can get.
You're
infinite
getting
ammo.
Infinite ammo. Yeah, like you have bullets like candy. I guess. Huh?
I guess. Can I have the grenade, miss?
There is a grenade in there. So let's see some letters to the editor. I wish I would have reminded myself which of these I wanted to point out. Great magazine, PSM. I have some questions. What is your viewpoint on game soundtracks? I've noticed that some games, like Tomb Raider 2, allow you to listen to the entire soundtrack when you play it on a standard CD player, while others don't let you hear anything, like Resident Evil 1 and 2. Is this strictly up to the individual publisher? Maybe it's because Resident Evil 1 and 2 is, of course, Japanese-developed games, and I think game soundtracks were a big market on their own in Japan.
They were, yeah.
But I guess I'd forgotten that you could just pop some PlayStation games into a CD player.
And some had hidden information, hidden tracks on them. Castlevania Symphony of the Night plays you a little message if you put it into a CD player.
Cool. Yeah. I liked this letter. First of all, I want to tell you that PSM is the greatest PlayStation magazine in the world. My two favorite sections are the fan art and the release schedule. So two sections that don't have any sort of editorial involvement. I guess they had a feature called Pause, where they introduce a topic from editor-in-chief Chris Slate, a topic for readers to think about and write in. And now this is all about 2D, dead as a doornail. Like it or not, 2D gaming is dead, kaput. Even hardcore old-school fans like me have to face the facts that no one is making 2D games anymore. But why is this? I realize that 3D games are still the newer, prettier in thing, and I enjoy them as much as anyone. But why can't we have both types of gameplay? 2D and 3D. The saddest part of all, I'm skipping ahead, saddest part of all this is the reason behind 2D's untimely demise. It wasn't some evil corporate scheme that put 2D under. Instead, gamers were the ones who did the dirty work. We voted against 2D with our game buying dollars, or rather, lack thereof. 2D games just don't sell, even the great ones, like Castlevania Symphony of the Night had disappointing sales.
Well, it's cool to call that out at least, because in our review of it, it talks about the one thing about this game you got to remember is that it's 2D, people were just freaking out for polygons at the time.
Yeah, for sure. Another letter. Since the PlayStation's introduction into market, developers have failed to keep pace with the PC RPG industry. Some may argue that PC-style RPG games like Fallout, Battlespire, and Baldur's Gate would pose serious programming problems due to the technological limitations of the PlayStation, but I truly believe this statement is false. If developers are capable of converting such PC games as Myst, Riven, Forsaken, Quake 2, and so on, then there is definitely no reason they can't convert some of the outstanding PC RPG games or create exclusive PC-style RPG games for the PlayStation. I just thought that was funny. Obviously, Fallout and Baldur's Gate are games that have become immensely popular with console gamers today.
Well, yeah, we had to wait for the trackball controllers.
Yeah. The trackball is the one that had to come out. I'm going to skip through lots of these letters. Oh, yeah. We're going to end here on an ad for ImagineGames.com. Were there?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Does that go to IGN today?
ImagineGames.com. I haven't tried it recently.
I'm going to check.
They're telling people about six different websites that all cover Quake.
Really?
It does not go to IGN today.
Blues News, Cases Ladder, Heat.net, Mecha World, PC Game World, and Stomped, and they're all about Quake.
Huh? Why that Quake needs six websites?
I
mean,
right? I know. I know it was popular. I didn't realize it was like that much of a phenomenon, like Fortnite level phenomenon. You need websites to cover Quake.
There's that D-pad logo down there, though.
Yeah, I was gonna point that out. Yeah, it's there. It is.
Yeah,
man, 98, unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean
IGN would have been formed it's our 25th anniversary this year, so we say
September 1996, I believe.
Yeah, so IGN already existed in some form.
But I wonder if there was. I'm gonna stop sharing. Wait, I'll keep doing it.
I'm not quite sure. I don't know what we count as like our anniversary because there's been many various starts.
It's
to IGN
switch over to 64. Is that right?
In 64.com would have. Been
I know
up
it,
and running,
if you
right?
guys want to know.
I want to
yeah,
hear
we do want to know, Tina.
It's the same date as the N64 launched.
Oh, okay.
which is like September.
So we count. So for our lore, really cool. we count the launch of N64.com as our launch, which then became IGN64.com, and then just became IGN.
September 29th, 1996.
Okay.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions, and we have a very clever submission this week that I want to share. Oh, unfortunately, we can't use his suggestion, and you'll understand in just a second. This comes from William Allen McDonough in Atlanta, and he's written some prose for you here. He says his favorite game of all time is The Guardian Legend. He says, big fan of the pod. I'm a new Omega head, came via NBC, got stuck on Scoop and 20 Qs, now I can never leave. I don't know many answers, but listening is edge of your seat. May I contribute to your game? Some riddles might be neat. Guess a game within a game. Yes, if they keep their wits, the answer can be found below. But first, here are the hints. And he asks that I read this out loud. And that brings us to 20 questions. Come Tina, Justin, Sam, and Swaim. I have for you a new suggestion, a quest or unknown planes. For you, Scoop Crew, a hard mode round. The meta has evolved. Perhaps you will all share the crown if the riddles can be solved. One of three hints you shall receive at each five questions end. Now, Damon, if you please, let the questioning begin. And so his idea is that you'd ask questions and you'd get a hint after every five questions. But listen, we can't use it. Yeah. The answer was...
Well, hold on.
Well, I would like to know the hints first.
Yeah.
I don't have those in front of me because we got to get to the real 20 questions. But listen, the answer is Journey of the Prairie King.
Oh, boy.
Does that mean anything to anyone?
No.
It's apparently an arcade machine found within Stardew Valley.
Mm. Oh.
So like, yeah. So that's why I'm not going to allow that. Not going to allow that. But I did want to share his very clever poem.
But now the pet store will be burned by the supervillain. Is that what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm afraid now the kittens will die.
I was hoping it was going to be the management sim in Yakuza.
Yeah, there you go. That's game with it.
Okay, real suggestion this week comes from John from Baltimore. Let the questioning begin.
I have a feature idea now, which is the best games inside games. Mm-hmm.
The best minigame.
It's well, Super Mario Brothers inside... You know,
yeah, not mini
Donkey
games.
Kong inside Donkey Kong 64.
Not mini games, but like playable fictional video games inside of a game.
Yeah.
Yakuza has those too. A bunch of Sega ones and all the arcades.
Yeah.
Are you guys sick of Yakuza yet?
Yeah. Yakuza Zero is great because that game takes place in 1988. And so it's Outrun and Super Hang On and Space Harrier.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Big Sega arcade late 80s.
I liked the dice game in Valhalla.
Yeah.
Could this game have appeared in Yakuza Zero?
Is it a Sega game then?
In the arcades of Yakuza Zero, if they allowed everything.
1988 or earlier.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
Was this game released in 1988 or earlier?
Yeah.
That's what you're asking? No.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
Could it have been in that magazine?
No.
All right.
When was that, 98?
Yeah.
Yep. 98.
November 98.
Is this game available to play on a current console, like on Xbox Series X, PS5, or Switch?
Yes.
That's so confusing with backward compatibility too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I should have phrased it in a different way.
Well, we can just directly ask that.
Okay.
Is this a game that you access in those systems through some sort of port or backwards compatibility?
Yes.
Well.
Great. Well, that's two more questions wasted. My bad. Is this game on the Switch?
No, that's five.
Well, I guess the backwards compatibility answer was yes. I'm just really screwing up this 20 questions.
I still get it.
Is it part of a series?
Yes.
Is there a multiplayer?
Yes.
Is it like a multiplayer centric game?
What do you consider to be multiplayer centric?
Like, is multiplayer one of the key draws? right?
Yeah.
Actually, okay, yeah, I'll say yeah.
Oh, so questionable, but mostly yes, is mostly the interpretation.
Yes. Surprising, yes. Surprising yes.
Yeah. So, like, it's not, you wouldn't immediately think of it, so it wouldn't be like a Call of Duty, but...
But maybe a big co-op game that everybody liked a lot or something.
It's Castle yeah. Crashers.
Okay. Is this
what was the way we modified our shooty question? It was like, do you shoot guns is how we normally say it, but then we decided there was a smarter way of saying it.
Yeah. Is the main gameplay in this shooting weapons? Is that what it was?
Yeah, not quite, but we could also say, are there like projectile weaponry in this game?
Right, because it's part of the main gameplay or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you shoot? Yeah, shooty projectile weapons at things in this game?
Yes.
I just want to point out that lasers are not projectiles.
That's true. So,
You know, depending on how you measure them, they have mass.
Is this a first-person perspective joke. Game?
No. That's okay. 10.
So third shooty series is all we know. And it's on a backward compatibility program, meaning it's not this generation's game, but maybe the previous.
Mm-hmm. It's part of a franchise.
Yep.
Could be Gears of War. But that's like overtly multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would actually do a hesitant Damon yes answer to that one, because people play for the campaign as well.
Mm-hmm. Is this game mature, what would
super
be a...
Super gory?
Yeah, is this a violent game, I guess, gory violent game?
Those are kind of two different questions.
Okay.
So right. So I think when we ask violent, it means gory, because there are a lot of violent video games, so like standout violent.
Or should we ask if it's rated M?
I was going to do ratings, but like I don't know my ratings.
I wouldn't even remember, yeah. And there are very few M-rated games.
Do you want to ask if this is like a particular like,
should we
gory...
just ask if you can see blood? If you see blood when you shoot things in this?
Sure.
I mean, in a lot of games.
Yeah, that's a lot of games.
Is it a particularly violent game?
No, it wouldn't be on any, like any lists of like hardcore violent games.
Yeah, so no chainsaws.
No chainsaws.
Although, like we established, you do shoot guns.
Yeah, okay. Man, should we find out if it's an indie game?
Yeah, because those could be less violent. I mean, they could also be more violent.
Series is a little bit less common. Is this an indie game?
No.
Yeah, series would have hinted at that a little bit.
Is this made in Japan?
Yes.
Mm. Oh, interesting. There's not a lot of shooty multiplayer Japan games that I can think of. I don't really have an era, so it makes it cool. It probably is an exclusive to one of those platforms, too. It's just not Nintendo. I mean, it's probably PlayStation, right?
Do you play as a woman?
You can.
Oh. Some sort of character selection, maybe just binary, though.
Yeah. Could this be a licensed game? Probably not, right? It's too late for that. Oh boy. Can we find out if it's a PlayStation exclusive? Well, I just don't know. I actually don't know any shooters that would kind of make that.
Well, it's not quite a shooter.
Yeah.
Because I think of first-person shooters when I say shooter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm having trouble with, like, we only narrow down era to, like, after 97.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's, like, I can't, like, picture, like, I don't know, like, it could be, like, Parasite Eve, you know, it could be anything. Although you only play as a
woman. We just know it's not on the contemporary systems because it is a port to the contemporary systems.
I guess that's a good point.
So that's good to know. So we could find out. I mean, if it's on, we could get really lucky and ask if it's on the PlayStation 3 era of games.
Yeah, it play PS2, PS3, or PS4, probably. It's gotta be one of them. Yeah, okay. Is it in the PlayStation 3 era of games?
Yes.
Cool. Nice call on that one.
That's 15.
And maybe Yeah, because that would be 360 PS3, and it sounds like made in Japan. I doubt it would be only on 360. Weird.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were a few Japanese 360 exclusives, like, you know, I don't know, like Blue Dragon, but like not too many I can think of.
So I'm thinking, and then the multiplayer. So I'm thinking like it could.
Where you can pick your character. So this could be possible some RPG elements. It could be third person action shooty game.
We don't know if it's co-op or competitive. I don't know if that's helpful.
Or both. I'm thinking like a Lost Planet 3 type thing, like something like you know, that has multiplayer and people wanted to play it.
Does the game have sci-fi themes?
Yes.
I've also been really hung up. I've been worried that it was a bow and arrow game this whole time. So
Damon actually let slip that it had guns in it in the middle of this, even though we didn't directly ask that. So that was helpful.
Got him.
Thanks, Damon.
So yeah, it could be Lost Planet 3. I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's too obscure. I mean, it matches a lot of these things, and it does have multiplayer.
Well, and the game's sci-fi themed, and it's on the PS3, or you know, maybe Xbox. But
what about like a? No, that's not a series. I was going to say like Valorant or like, is that what that's called?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not that many like big Japanese game developers. So it's like, you know, it's Namco or Capcom or Tecmo or, or, you know, or Sony.
Could it be a Metal Gear with a weird multiplayer mode?
I was thinking about that.
Where you choose your character?
No. Well, yeah, only that would only be if the mode had that, which it doesn't.
What was it? Metal Gear Solid 3 was the one on the PS3?
That was still 2.
Really?
4 was PS3, yeah.
Plus mostly multiplayer known game.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, multiplayer draw. Man, like, I don't... Japanese games that had, like, a draw for us all to be playing at that time that were not indie games, kind of interesting.
Would it help to explore if there are, like, if there's another element to the genre to narrow down, like, it's more of an action RPG or...
Yeah, are there monsters in it or something like that?
Or maybe vehicles or something that we can ask?
Could it be Monster Hunter?
Yeah, I just don't know what the multiplayer component of, like, a PlayStation 3 era Monster Hunter game would be.
I mean, probably pretty prominent. Like, that's the game's whole thing.
They were only on PSP, and then they were only on Nintendo systems. I don't think there was ever a PS3 Monster Hunter.
There were home console Monster Hunters, I think.
On Wii and Wii U and stuff like that, or like Nintendo systems mainly, I think.
Okay.
Not until the last one on PS4. I'm not sure, but...
I think they've been on consoles for a while, but I'm not a big fan of the franchise, so I'm not positive.
So, monsters or vehicles? I don't know if the... I need some other gameplay stuff like that, though.
Are there vehicles in this game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
Yeah, I wish the answer was like no.
Warhawk?
Yeah, Warhawk's pretty good.
I mean, if it was that, like, there's, like, PlayStation exclusives.
Warhawk or, like, Ace Combat.
Ace Combat's interesting.
You know, like vehicular.
Right.
Zipping and zopping around.
Mm-hmm. They had a VR mode in the latest, right? Ace Combat 7. Mm-hmm. Has this. Should we go down that route? Do you guys feel confident about that?
If we're confident about flying games or things with flying, we can ask if you fly in it, you know? We just don't know that.
So I like that.
Do you fly vehicles in this?
I can't answer that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Can't answer that. Can't or won't, Dan.
Yeah.
Two questions and a guess.
Okay. I mean, a vehicular game. So it could be something that's open world. We don't really know very much about this game. Are there Japanese-made open-world games in the PS3 era? Probably.
And it might not be a PS3 game. I just have no idea. That's what's making this so difficult.
Yeah, this is not our best effort.
Just remember the meta.
Oh, yeah.
Just remember the meta.
What came out this week? What have we been talking about?
Or what did we talk about? What did we just talk about? EA. Mm-hmm. Yakuza.
Yeah, Yakuza.
Stuff in the magazine, like... Yeah, it could be Yakuza.
But he said it wasn't in the magazine, at least.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. So it can't be that.
It's also not not multiplayer in the Yakuza games.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Could it be the multiplayer Final Fantasy?
No.
The world?
14?
No, I don't think there's guns. I mean, I don't know. There's probably some character class that has guns, but it's not like a thing in the game. And it's also not sci-fi themed.
Hmm. Oh, the sci-fi. That's right. Is there? Oh, what about Star Wars?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did we just have
a?
Yeah. Ooh. But I think you can fly TIE fighters in those, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not the old one. Maybe not that one. You can in the new
ones.
Yeah,
I don't think that was all ground battles. The PSP one added some space stuff. Is this based on a license?
No.
Well, I give up.
Yeah.
We got one more question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we ask if it's an open world game?
That wouldn't even... If the answer is yes, I'd be like, I still don't know what it is. I'd like to know, I mean, if we had 5 questions to get back, I'd want to start getting at developers, is what I would want to do. Because it's like, is it, you know, could be Lost Planet, you know, could be a Capcom game, we don't know.
Yeah. We could burn it on an exclusivity thing, but I don't know if that would get me any closer to an answer.
Yeah, same.
And I would have said a press conference one, but most are no.
Should we use the cheat?
Have you mentioned this game?
Or I've mentioned the series, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have we mentioned the series yet?
No.
Yeah.
Well, so we're really far off.
The answer is always no, and then that always means it's time to wrap up the segment.
All right.
Well, we're down to our guests, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even have a best guess, then, if we haven't mentioned it yet, so.
I liked where you were going with Warhawk. I don't know. I don't have it.
Yeah.
Sci-fi third-person multiplayer.
Starhawk. Starhawk is what the updated one was called.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi series, PS3, multiplayer, third-person.
Not licensed.
You have... Oh, man. Yeah.
Shall I reveal it?
Sure, yeah.
I think a mistake you guys made is you assumed it was a 3D game.
Okay.
Well, we were told 2D games were over, so.
Yeah,
that's true. But this game is part of April's Games with Gold.
The audience voted with their money.
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard.
The game is Hardcore Uprising.
Oh,
what?
Just talked about that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the meta. Multiplayer on
that. That was the whole meta.
Look at that vehicle coming out of the sand.
Yeah, don't remember that. Well,
it's part of the Contra series.
Yes, it is. What is the... We can start asking, do we mention this developer yet?
Well, I don't know if you mentioned Konami either. Oh, wait, but the developer is Arc System Works, and Konami published it.
Arc System Works?
Yeah.
I don't think they're around anymore.
I think they are still.
Mm, I hope so.
This was 2011. It was on both 360 and PS3, but today it's an exclusive on Xbox. I don't think you can play it on PS3 or on PS5.
You probably can't buy it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it's very fun.
That's a really good game, yeah.
But 20 questions is not fun. It's a mean game, a cruel game.
It's certainly the
cruelest game.
I think it's less cruel than Journey of the Prairie King. Whatever.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I like the meta there, though.
Hardcore Uprising came from John from Baltimore, so feel free to at Sam.
Yep, please.
If you like John. Mm-hmm. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.
Thank you to Borba, who's working behind the scenes. My name is David. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.